What's up, guys? It's your boy Zach, host of The Aux, and you are about to listen to a clip from an episode from behind the paywall on Auxoro Premium. If you'd like to support independent creators like myself, you can go to auxoro.supercast.com for 3 hours of exclusive podcast content per month. We're bringing you episodes on exciting, sometimes twisted topics like COVID lab leak, MK Ultra, the obesity epidemic, Tom Cruise, Tim Dillon, no topic off limits. For less than $5 per month when you sign up for the year, head to auxoro.supercast.com today and become a premium subscriber. This is the best deal in premium podcasting. No ads, no half-assed episodes. We punch you in the mouth with 3 hours of exclusive content every month. Go to auxoro.supercast.com to get knocked the fuck out with the hardest hitting episodes. auxoro.supercast.com. Without further ado, please enjoy this sneak preview clip from the Auxoro Premium Vault.
I feel a burp coming up.
You do it to start it off.
Oh, it was shitty.
All right.
I'll come later. Wait. During your introduction.
Okay, we are doing the Auxoro Premium podcast episode today for October. And we're doing it on a man named Theodore Bundy, Ted Bundy. And I am here with my girlfriend, Julie, and her friend, and my friend now, Maddie. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
So good.
So this is actually the first time that Maddie is staying in my apartment in New York. And I figured the best way to start off our relationship would be to record a podcast on one of the most prolific serial killers ever known to man, because that's just how I like to start off friendships. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, let's record something on the most fucked up person I could think of. So I'm excited to be recording this episode on Ted Bundy today with you guys.
Jump right into spooky season.
100%.
And also your first conversation ever with Maddie. So that's just good.
That's true. Yes. I've never had my first full conversation with someone recorded, nonetheless, just on one of the most psychotic people ever to exist. And I should mention that our theme for these outfits, if you're watching the video preview, I'm dressed as some guy in the 70s, because Ted Bundy was active in the 70s. So I guess if he was gay, I might be a potential victim. I like to think that I'm attractive enough to have been a potential Ted Bundy victim.
You're too blonde.
Yeah, he was into brunettes, which we'll get into. And then, so yeah, that's kind of the theme we're going with today. And I may remove my glasses before we start, because they're fogging up as I'm talking. So
we got
the shot before
taking off those rose-colored glasses.
100%.
How's it going to go from here?
Oh, it's fine. As long as I keep the shirt on. I may lose a few buttons during the podcast, depending on how many seltzers I drink.
But get sweaty in here.
So before we even get into it, what comes to mind when you guys think of Ted Bundy? Like, what's the first thing that you think when you hear the name Ted Bundy?
Well, we've actually watched the movie with Zac Efron together.
Right, and that actually was so much more impactful than I expected it to be. And like, once again, no hate towards Zac Efron, but I never expected him to embody a much more serious role. But he very much, I guess, used to play the pretty boy and everything that he was cast in. And so I think that within that same vein, he did that really, really well. So I don't know. Yeah, like pretty boy, smart, charismatic.
Yeah, well, it really struck me during the film, and I thought that's where he really did a great job, was the whole time that I was watching the film. And honestly, I didn't know anything about Ted Bundy before that. I'm not even American, so this is not part of the serial killers I necessarily learn about. Not that I learned about them at school anyway. But he was just this charming character that just lured audiences into believing he was innocent until the moment he almost died. Like, even after he was imprisoned, a lot of people still believe he was innocent. And I think the movie was great in that sense, that when I was watching it, I was like, is he, like, I was like, yeah, he's innocent. Like, this is just a big mistake. And
did you know that he wasn't innocent before you watched the movie? Did you know the whole story of Ted Bundy?
I literally did not know.
So Zac Efron's depiction was the first kind of insight into the world of Ted Bundy that you got.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me that, and you were just like, no, like I was on the edge of my seat. Like, did he do it?
Yeah.
Like, no, he didn't do it. You got confused.
Like, oh my God, like this is a biopic and Zac Efron's playing himself. Zac Efron's actually like a mass murderer, serial killer. I had no idea.
It all comes together.
Yeah, this makes so much sense.
No, I really felt like I was watching Titanic and being like, oh my God, what's going to happen to them?
So I wrote down a quote that I think pretty much describes the ethos of Ted Bundy. And this is from his former defense attorney, John Henry Brown. And this guy said that Ted Bundy is a rare type of sociopath. He's an aware sociopath. He knew he was evil and he knew he was a monster. And the more that I looked into Ted Bundy the few days leading up to this podcast and watching him and listening to him actually speak on the Ted Bundy tapes, it's crazy how much he was aware of his own psychology. And there was this moment in the Ted Bundy tapes where one of the investigative reporters who was recording the tape was trying to get Ted Bundy to open up, and he was treating the tapes like a celebrity bio. He wasn't talking about the crimes at first. He was trying to flip it into some sort of movie or book about him probably still hoping not to die on death row. And this investigative reporter had the idea to get Ted Bundy to talk in a third person. And so basically say, instead of asking him, what are these crimes you committed? He would say, okay, if you were someone like this, what would they do? And then listening to the tapes of him say things like, you know, if I were trying to lure in a female of this age and I had these things on me, this is the approach that I would take. And if I wanted her to feel safe, I would say this, and all these things that you could, like, knowing the evidence that's there for him actually committing these crimes and being indicted for it. It was crazy hearing him be so aware of, by basically painting a picture of himself. It was pretty nuts listening to the tapes.
I guess it just like speaks to his emotional intelligence and overall intelligence, which is even scarier because it's just like, no, like this guy knows what he's doing. Like, he is fully conscious and fully aware. And like, and when you were saying, sociopathy, is the difference between sociopathy and psychopathy is sociopaths grow into it, right? And then psychopaths are born.
I've heard
with
them
it?
Used interchangeably. Julie would probably know better.
There is definitely a difference. I think sociopaths are able to some form of empathy, so they can still empathize with others. And so generally when they're depicted, let's say in television, we tend to, like the sociopath, like Sherlock Holmes, etc., which is like this adorable psychopath of some sort. Well, like a psychopath cannot feel any empathy, and there's like genetic mutations that can like make you more likely to develop psychopathy, plus it's like your environment as well. But from what psychology says, psychopathy is just that you are unable to understand basically human emotions. And that's what's so scary, is like thinking that someone could do something without feeling remorse, because that's not a feeling that they understand. Well, like in a way, sociopath kind of have more of a backstory and a purpose. And I think it's like, but like you said, it's kind of like interchangeable and depends on the context. Yeah. But
yeah, the whole guilt thing, he actually said that he doesn't feel guilty for anything that he did. And he also feels bad for people that feel guilty about anything. And so it sounds like he prided himself on his lack of guilt, because that allowed him to move in the world much differently than other people. And he used that for destruction and death rather than, you know, I guess someone like him, maybe he could have been a cutthroat investment bank or something, just like making hardcore financial decisions. I know a lot of people,
Wall Street is.
Yeah, exactly. I know, I've read in the past that a lot of sociopathic types get into careers that are high risk, like finance, Wall Street, those type of things, and things that require you kind of quelling that emotion. And I guess if you don't have that emotion to begin with, or it's not really making a blip on the radar, like your emotion dials aren't like going out of sorts, then it allows you to execute that job more easily, but he did not choose that.
I mean, it's also career. Definitely a spectrum. So like, it's hard to like put Ted Bundy into like the sociopath box or psychopath box. And he was definitely clearly a narcissist as well, which makes him a whole of a box at the end. So I think it was not like devoid of emotions or anything. Like, he probably didn't feel anything for his victims. And from what I've seen with the documentary, it's kind of like, was expressing that he was like blacking out and got into this rage where he was not necessarily controlling himself. And I don't know if that's true, if that was like an excuse he was making, but he loved the attention. And like, why his trial probably got so publicized was because he was so self-obsessed mm-hmm. and wanted the attention that I think he was really attached to that. And yeah. So he's capable of emotions, but like not the ones that we would hope a good person has.
Yeah, that's the thing that I realized looking into all this stuff is that our society today is so set against seeing nuances in people, because if you want to vilify a person, it makes it easier if they fit all in the evil box, or if you want to praise something, it makes it easier if they fit all in the good box. But there's so much nuance to Ted Bundy's experience and what he was doing and how he was treating everyone in his life, not just his victims. Mm-hmm. And I think it starts with his childhood. And I was going through a bunch of stuff in his childhood in the Ted Bundy tapes. And so the first kind of fucked up thing that happened to him that was definitely abnormal, Ted Bundy's mother had him out of wedlock, which back in the 40s when he was born was very... if stigmatic, if that's a word, it would
frowned upon.
Yeah, very frowned upon, kind of like the scarlet letter. Oh, you had a kid and you're not married. Back in the 40s, it's like, what are you doing? You're never gonna get married now. No husband is gonna accept that. So they were in Tacoma, Washington, and they moved. Ted Bundy and his mom moved in with the mom's parents, so Ted's grandparents, it's somewhere in the Northeast. But the fucked up thing is that Ted Bundy's mom made Ted think that she was his sister and that the grandparents were the parents. So Ted Bundy grew up thinking that his mom was his sister because she wanted to get away from the stigma of being the mother to a kid out of wedlock when she moved in with her parents. So she basically, I assume she had some sort of discussion with her parents saying, hey, can you be the parents and I'm just going to grow up as the sister? And Ted Bundy didn't find out that his mom, that his sister was his mom until late in life, like college. Mm-hmm. I think it was middle of college. So that's like the first super fucked up abnormal thing that if you were to brew a serial killer in a pot, you'd be like, definite parent issues,
trauma.
Like parent issues at the least, like something fucked up happening in your family. And I couldn't even imagine like at 21 years old, if my sister was like, by the way, I'm your mom. I'd just be like, what the fuck is going on in my life?
That sounds like a massive bite to take off for a therapist.
Mm-hmm. How old was he when he committed his first murder that we know of?
1974, and he was born in the mid 1940s, so about 30, like okay. maybe yeah, like yeah, 30 yeah. plus or minus a couple right. years. Mm-hmm. And so that was like the first fucked up thing that happened to him, the whole, you know, mom sister mm-hmm. situation.
Do we know the age difference?
It probably, I'm guessing she was a young mom. I'm mm-hmm. guessing maybe she had him when she was 20s, yeah, maybe even 20s, late teens, yeah. early 20s, where it wouldn't have been crazy. She might have also looked young too.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I mean, I don't know how else you would play that off. Even if you're a 21-year-old mom, it's still like, okay, but there's a quarter of a lifetime in between you guys.
I feel like if she was a teenage mom, that would kind of make sense. And it does happen that like, I've like met people that had their kids and they're like, okay, we're done. And they're basically finishing high school and then they have a new kid. So like, being like 16, 17 years apart from a sibling is possible. It's not the most frequent, but I think that would be, because I feel like this situation and, you know, like, I don't feel like that should neglect its trauma, but this type of thing have happened to many homes where teen mom gets pregnant accidentally. And so the grandparents, as they're still taking care of their daughter who goes to school, mm-hmm. take care of him and they pretend to be. So of course that's a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But they don't all go on to become a serial killer.
No, no, not an excuse at all for his actions, of course. But you could see how that lays the foundation for distrust in women. And then if you have sociopathic tendencies wanting to get back at the, you know, I don't know exactly how he felt about his mom, if he was accepting of it, or maybe he feigned acceptance, but really deep down was like, fuck this bitch. Like, how could she lie to me for 20 something years? And then that kind of laid the groundwork for him taking a lifetime to get back at the first woman who screwed him over, which was ultimately his mom, or first woman who lied to him.
Yeah.
And there the first button goes.
It's the first button. It's definitely
there. we'll be to the bottom by the end of the podcast.
Tight.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll get rid of one button with you.
Thank
so you're
you.
Not alone.
Thank you. Do you have any buttons, Maddie?
I don't have any buttons.
All right, that's fine.
Left I can do is take off my pants. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. we'll get there. So also Ted's dad, grandpa. So he grew up thinking his grandpa was his dad. Yeah. Was abusive, violent, apparently used to beat the family dogs in front of him and swing cats around by their tails in front of Ted, which for the time apparently was not that abnormal. Apparently there were a lot of dads beating their pets back in the day. It was much more common. It wasn't, I don't think it was most dads, but there were a good chunk of dads that were abusing pets from what I read. So it actually wasn't crazy.
80 years ago, man. Oh,
was he just different times. Was he just finding random cats to just like whisk around?
That
like
the
lasso? Like the lasso cat?
His dad's just leaving out bowls of milk in the backyard waiting for a cat to pick up. He's like, Ted, come here. I got another one. Here
catch.
We go. Yeah. he's looking forward to... He grows up and he's like, you guys didn't play catch with cats in the backyard with your dad? Like, that was our favorite bonding thing. We would like whip a cat at each other. And
it's
they're
you
like,
or the wall.
Yeah. And they're like, no, we threw baseballs, bro. Like, what are you talking about?
What's a ball?
Yeah.
Sounds boring.
And Ted's like, damn, you're fucking weirdos. Like, how did you not do that with
nothing
your dad?
Nothing like putting a dog through a basket.
But I don't know, like from... working in PTSD, I mean, a lot of trauma does stem from watching animal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's in that same vein. So I can understand how that would also contribute to sociopath popping out Ted Bundy. Yeah.
I don't know that much about the mechanism of trauma other than... listening to a lot of comedians that are unpacking trauma on their podcast. That's been my trauma education 101. But apparently the things that happen to you early in life create these preconceptions that turn into actions a lot of times, and then that becomes normalized, and then you have to actively unpack your trauma and figure out the reasons behind it, or else you're kind of walking through life on trauma autopilot, kind of just reacting to shit. So it makes sense that if you saw your dad swinging around cats in the front yard or beating the dog, that you'd be like, all right, I guess those living things at least don't deserve respect. So humans may not be a far jump to him seeing that as a 5-year-old.
Yeah, that's the thing. Once you devalue one form of life, what stops you from devaluing the next?
Yeah.
Oh shoot, I lost my train of thought. What was I gonna say? I don't know.
It'll come back.
It's gone.
It'll come back.
But I mean,
once we lose the next button, it'll come back.
Oh, it was about trauma and like the neurobiology of it. I feel that when it comes to like trauma, mental health, so many other mental health issues are embedded in it as well. So I wonder if that also played a huge part. Like, it's not just trauma. It's like, okay, well, it's also anxiety. It's also depression. It's also substance abuse to deal with the trauma and the depression and the anxiety. It's like, it's just like one thing on top of the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that at some point, I'm sure, played a part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think it has to be trauma combined with some genetic predisposition to lead to a serial killer of his tendencies, because there are a lot of people that go through trauma, and a lot of people have had parents that are abusive, but almost none of those people become serial killers. So it's it sounds like that there has to be some predisposition within people like Ted Bundy, and maybe even and Ted Bundy himself. I don't know. I didn't see if they conducted an autopsy on him or look at his brain or anything like that.
They fried it up.
Yeah, they fucking torched it. Yeah.
So
because like, this cannot be on this planet any longer.
Yeah,
it caused enough damage.
But I mean, I don't know if that was the case, but assuming that his grandfather was mistreating him, he probably was doing the same to his mom / sister. So maybe, you know, and if he was doing it to animals, it's like, my life doesn't have value. My sister / mom's life doesn't have value. Animals don't have value. So it's like, I think just when everyone and everything around you is being treated like they're nothing, it might become easy for you to just not care about anyone either.
Yeah. And apparently Ted Bundy also talked about his early interest in porn when he was younger, which a lot of people get into porn. Ted Bundy got very Christian at the end of his life, like a lot of people do on death row. So he started talking about like pornography and how bad it is and God and stuff like that. But this guy, Dr. Al Carlisle, who is a psychologist that evaluated Ted Bundy, said that he takes in a lot of sexual reliving through these fictional stories. And he starts building up a dark side when he's lonely, angry, depressed, and can shift into it. And apparently when Ted Bundy was younger, he was alone a lot because he was an only child. He wasn't in a great family, so he had access to porn. And then he also liked detective stories that were violent. And then at some point, allegedly, he started looking into more violent porn. So he was associating sex and violence from a very early age. And so he might have built up some sort of connection as a kid to getting off sexually, but then also combining that with some sort of violence in a way where it just became normal to him as a kid and started acting that out as an adult, maybe, or gradually bringing it into relationships. I don't know. It's all speculation because no one actually knows. But according to this guy who evaluated him multiple times, he spoke about porn and getting into violent porn from a very early age.
Well, when you think about like what a strong drive sex is, it's like you can, and of course like the complexities of porn, especially in today's day and age, and when kids are growing up with so much access to porn.
Can you hold the mic a little bit? Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
Growing up with so much access to porn, you can totally see the complexity and how that would just completely deteriorate somebody's point of view.
Yeah. And also having, you know, like that sister to mom transition. I feel like I'm not a boy, so of course I've experienced puberty differently. And like, I think girls also get that excitatory stage a lot later, but I feel that, you know, through confusion, you know, you kind of try to figure out who you are, and obviously you may have some thoughts within your family, and so this whole transition thing and seeing so much violence from his father / grandfather with the porn, that kind of like might reflect his family situation and where kind of like he blurred out the lines on what's real and what's not and what can be done. And I feel a lot of the youth today is also experiencing that, and of our generations too, where porn does not depict reality, but a lot of young people don't think so and have a lot of complexes because they don't look like porn stars, or because sex doesn't feel the way that it seems to be doing on television. So I feel like indeed that might contribute at just making reality versus not reality kind of like harder to figure out.